help. So what's going to happen? But that is not being addressed.
That's the kind of story reporters could be doing, even as they can't get politicians to answer their questions.
Exactly.
Well, we've been speaking with Trudy Lieberman. She's longtime contributing editor to the Columbia Journalism Review, where she's lead writer for The Second Opinion, CJR's healthcare desk. It's part of their United States project on the coverage of politics and policy. She is also contributing editor of Remaking Healthcare at the Center for Health Journalism at USC. Trudy Lieberman, thank you so much for joining us today on Counterspin.
Thank you, Janine. It's always a pleasure.
And that's it for Counterspin for this week. Counterspin is produced by FAIR, the National Media Watch Group, based in New York. For more information about FAIR, you can check out our website, fair.org. The show is engineered by Alex Noyes. I'm Janine Jackson. Thanks for listening to Counterspin.
This is KBOO Portland. The time is 6 o'clock, and coming up next is Bread and Roses.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 2017 Juneteenth Celebration on Saturday, June 17th, in Foster Hall at Clark College, Vancouver, Washington. Juneteenth, a.k.a. Freedom Day or Emancipation Day, is a holiday commemorating the abolition of slavery in the state of Texas some 2 years after slavery was abolished. The Juneteenth celebration will feature African dance, speakers, music, food, a pie contest, and more. Again, that's the 2017 Juneteenth celebration on Saturday, June 17th, in Foster Hall at Clark College, 1933 Fort Vancouver Way in Vancouver, Washington. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO is a proud co-sponsor of the Liberty Ball Saturday, June 17th, starting at 6 p.m. at Revolution Hall in Portland. The Liberty Ball features seven local acts sharing their music to support marginalized communities and critical social justice issues. Indigenous psych rockers Mascaras are headlining with support from Hungry Ghost, Blue Cranes, The Ghost Ease, and more. This is an all-ages family-friendly event, which will also have a raffle, palm readings, a photo booth, and more. Again, that's the Liberty Ball Saturday, June 17th from 6 p.m. to midnight at Revolution Hall, 1300 Southeast Stark Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland Saturday Market. From our hands to yours, celebrating 44 years of American arts and crafts, freshly prepared foods, with an international flavor and local music every Saturday and Sunday from March through Christmas Eve in Waterfront Park. Local artisans, international food, live music, PortlandSaturdayMarket.com.
At the dawn of the day, all the darkened kitchens, the mill of gray, all touched by the radiance that the sun discloses. Oh, hear the people singing bread and roses.
Hi, you're listening to Bread and Roses, Feminist News and Public Affairs on the KBOO airwaves since 1978, the longest-running feminist radio broadcast program in the country. Bread and Roses is a collective of women and non-binary radio activists who give voice to those in global and local spaces working for social justice and equity, and we strive to challenge systems of oppression. All this, and we have fun. We want our bread and roses too. Get it? I'm your host tonight, Pamela Santos, and our guest here is Anna Vo.
Hello.
Our engineer is Raid Bodwell, and we have pretty much the whole rest of this hour to take phone calls. We don't always take calls in the evening like this, but for this particular topic of microaggressions, we'll be taking calls at 503-231-8187. And one more time, the number is 503-231-8187, and you can talk to our engineer, Ray. So before I even get into any of our callers, as they come in, I wanted to really give time to first really have, you know, Anna talk first, and really, let's even get started. Why do you think it's important for us to talk about microaggressions on the radio?
More specifically, I feel like giving people the space to process or understand them in order to achieve more of a clarity is kind of the space that we're providing. And I think that that might not be a space that people have access to on the regular. So I think it's important to allow space for folks in their personal lives or their professional lives to reflect on certain interactions or dynamics that exist for them.
And when we, because this is not your first time on Bread and Roses, in a sense, and also on KBOO, but I talked to you about this a couple of months ago, and originally, honestly, I just felt like it's such an evergreen topic that there really is a lot of people out there that really need that space.
Right. I think that at the moment we are living in a fairly heavy climate where we're being bombarded by a lot of serious kind of news articles and news items, and also institutional oppression. So kind of a lot of external things that are adding to like an accumulative climate of not just trauma, but tension and heaviness. So I feel like there are a lot of people there walking with a burden of accumulative trauma, accumulative microaggressions, accumulative racism, accumulative homophobia, and other interactions that they're holding. And part of why we're here is to hopefully kind of lighten that load even just for a minute.
Before we get our first caller up, I definitely wanted to give you space to define microaggressions first.
Oh, I see. Microaggressions specifically is a term that I only learned after coming to the States. The best way I could describe it is maybe interactions or situations that might be nonverbal. So instead of someone being blatantly racist or explicitly racist, there is a message in the event or in the action that sends a clear racist message, however it might not be verbal and it might not be as tangible. So the effect is still the same, but it's harder to describe at times and it's harder to talk about.
When you've experienced it.
When you've experienced it or witnessed it or observed it, it might be hard to label it or to describe it, and that makes it hard to disrupt.
Mm-hmm. Right. And we're going to keep talking about it, but let's see who's on right now.
Okay.
So, hi, is this Dominic?
Yes, it is.
Hi. Thanks for calling Bread and Roses.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
What did you want to talk about, Dominic?
Yeah, so I'm listening to y'all's show for the first time, driving home, and the timing is right, but I just had a an incident happened pretty recently that I think y'all maybe have some insight on.
Mm-hmm.
And so essentially, something to be approached carefully, but, you know,
mm-hmm.
as there are, you know, as white privilege and as racism and sexism are these generally one-directional things, I don't want y'all to think I'm going into the arena of, I guess, what do you call it when, like, men start asking for sympathy, men's rights, and, like,
There's a lot of names for it.
Yeah, so I just want to share my experience I had recently, and that is, you know, I have one friend who is a really, really cool, impressive lady, a very active activist, and just a strong character who really, really takes a stand for oppressed people, and, you know, her work is in that, and basically all her energy is in that.
Sounds good.
Yeah, she's really dope. So the other night we had a discussion, and basically ended up going into a path where I wasn't able to reason with her much.
Mm.
I tried to show her an author I really liked, a person I really liked who's a white guy.
Mm-hmm. So what was your objective for trying to reason with her when she was sharing what seemed to be an emotional experience? Or was she sharing her perspective on something? Or?
So basically what it was is I brought up something. Y'all know who Tony Robbins is?
Yes.
Right. So Tony Robbins is someone I think is awesome. Right? He's not everything to everybody, but
mm-hmm.
I really like the guy. So I brought something up and somehow bringing up Tony Robbins and wanting to share something. And then, you know, my friend saying, you know, I don't need to hear this. I've already heard this.
Mm-hmm.
It's just more white guy stuff, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I've heard it because it's a white guy.
Right.
And, you know, ultimately, you know, I didn't need to dig into this, so I don't know how to bring this up with her. But, you know, was not able to, and I think it's a shame because, you know, there's a whole lot of really good philosophies that you probably will find most of the time from white guys.
Okay. Alrighty. So let's start with a couple of things. So first of all, you were talking to your friend, and she drew a boundary and said that she didn't want to hear more about what you were talking about. Is that correct?
No.
She said to you, I don't want to hear anymore. So she asked you to stop. Is that correct?
No, that's not correct. Basically what it was her, I mean, she was doing most of the talking, right?
Okay.
I brought it up and wanted to, and I mean, she said she wasn't interested in it, but I didn't try to force it on her.
Okay, cool. I mean, I'm really glad you called, and I really appreciate that you took the time to call. And
thank you.
I think that what I'd like to understand is your objective for calling. Is it in order to clarify and understand the interaction, or is it to justify your reaction to it? Because I'm happily here to support you in understanding and maybe in better supporting your friend, and I'm happy to do that. Is that what you were trying to do in calling?
Basically, I'm hoping for some insight for how to. How to approach? I mean, really, like me and this friend have a little bit of healing to do now.
With
a couple of interactions. I mean, and this being part of it.
Mm. Mm-hmm. So okay. So first of all, I feel that what I'm sensing is that you, at first, have a reaction that may or may not be defensiveness or a kind of an initial kind of injury to something. Because you consider yourself, do you consider yourself a white male? Is that what's happening?
Kind of.
Okay, cool. So part of it is when she says, you know, I don't really want to hear more of this white male stuff, that maybe that's a personal affront to you, and you initially take it with a little bit of defensiveness because that's the umbrella term that you also fall under. Is there a little bit of that?
Is there? Well, I mean, I say it's for me, it's a frustration of not being open to something, right? Judging it before having heard it, essentially.
Right, right. And you don't think it is related to the fact that that also encompasses your identity as a friend?
I mean, I think there's definitely probably some ego stuff for me. I mean, I think if it happened with, you know, a white lady, you know, if somebody didn't want to hear something because it was an Asian man, then I would definitely have a similar reaction.
Okay. Okay. So the difference is, I'm glad you brought up that that example. So for example, an Asian man, for example, Asian males have a stereotype of being less. So there's a societal stereotype that exists with certain people of color, and since you brought up that example, Asian males have a stereotype that they are more passive than other men, and that they're less like heard and maybe less visible than other men in society. So yeah. Because of that stereotype and because of other people and media perpetuating that stereotype, when you give more time to someone that has a negative experience from a negative stereotype, that's equalizing a power imbalance. So you're giving time to maybe an Asian male to listen to them because maybe because of stereotypes they don't have as much time given to them as maybe a white male might have, because in society white males receive more social capital. People assume when a white male is talking they know what they're talking about, and so more importance and more validity is given to white male voices in society. So that's just to describe your example. But specifically with your friend, one, there's a few things, there's a few layers here. One, I'm hearing that it was a conversation between two friends. And if your friend is saying, like, this is something I don't want to continue talking about, I would, as a friend, respect what they're asking. And I'm glad that you I'm glad you didn't push it. It sounds great that you didn't force that and didn't push that. That's a wonderful approach. Number two, I would, like you said, there's some ego stuff there. I would examine your personal initial response and examine why you're hurt by it, and two, why you seem very adamant about also wanting to continue proving your point. And I'm not saying that in an accusatory way. I'm just saying, like, maybe examine why you still want to prove your point, because there's a point there that you're still kind of, you want to repair the friendship, but you also, there's a part of you that also wants to just want her to see your point. And I would take a step back from that and try and see her point.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so number three, systemically, women, non-binary folks, queer folks, trans folks are given less time, less validity, and less voice systemically, mm-hmm. structurally, societally. So when your friend says, you know, I don't want to hear more about Tony Robbins or other white males because I feel like that's more white male stuff, they might be not talking about Tony Robbins. They might not be talking about you. They might be talking about a construct that exists in society, which is a voice that has been louder than everyone for many, many generations. And people that a voice that people believe is right, even when it's not right. And we're seeing that now in our current administration. We're seeing that now in media, when certain voices are just assumed to be correct, even if they're not factual at all. Does that make sense, what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, definitely.
Right. So when you say something like, okay, so is it reverse sexist if someone is saying that I don't need to talk more about a male perspective? What was my point? I lost my point. I think the more important question is, has she been given time and accommodation to like be heard in that, you know?
Yeah.
Does that make sense? I'm just worried that I'm not being clear. Do you have any questions about what I'm saying, or if you have any responses, that's fine too.
Mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, I appreciate the, I understand the purpose of kind of like equalizing the playing field, right? Like, I grew up pretty conservative, and I remember being pretty frustrated about something like, you know, giving people of color higher rates of admission to places, or like, you know, when schools are doing busing, thinking that was unfair. And I completely understand the value of that, right? Because we're just shifting physical things around, so stereotypes just become a thing of the past, right?
Kind of, yeah.
Well, it's just changing what we've inherited, right? So if you have, it's just, you know. Anyway, and so I see the value in that. So my concern here is that you know, somebody will. I mean, first off, there's just an emotional layer of just like, you know, emotions need to be considered, and you know, no, that's first off, right? And I'm glad I was able to not, you know, take this too far or anything. But the next layer is, you know, having access to good information, right? And so by that, I just, you know, by not letting, let's say Tony Robbins, in this example, had some insights that could help her life a lot.
Okay. Okay, so this is a question of consent. Did she ask for that advice, or was there a moment where she was inviting advice, or was this advice given without invitation?
I can't recall.
That's fine. It's a it's more of a rhetorical question regarding when and how men traditionally take up space. And, you know, we have like colloquial terms for it, including mansplaining. But what that comes from is when traditionally men will offer an opinion when it hasn't been invited. So I'm getting the call for wrapping it up in a second. But go ahead.
Sorry to interrupt you. But to try to see if I had an interesting point throughout all this. This reminds me of a of another friend I have. Have you heard of a book called Think and Grow Rich?
No, I haven't.
So Think and Grow Rich is kind of this like grandfather text of like personal development philosophy. So like all books that talk about, you know, how to be successful, or like law of attraction and things like that. This is one of those first books like that. And it's basically written by a guy who had the thought, I'm going to interview successful people and ask them how they did what they did. And this is like in the 30s.
Dominic, this is Pamela. I'm going to try to ask you to try to wrap up or get to the point. Thanks.
Thank you. So the point is, so this guy, a white guy in his 30s, interviews, you know, meets Andrew Carnegie, who's then, you know, Robert Barron, one of the most rich men on earth. And he says, you know, I want to hire you. I want to give you the secret to my success if you spend the rest of your life researching it into a book. And so he did that. And so it's this, it's a book with incredible, incredible information, and it's mostly from white guys, right? Because in this circle of success, it was white people.
Right? Yeah. I think I understand your point, and you're saying that when information is gathered, then why aren't people listening?
Or, no, I know. What I'm saying is basically that I think because this information has been with white guys, I think it's all that more important that everybody get this particular kind of information. Right?
But most information historically is from white men, so why would this be any more valuable or...
Because this is the information that is passed around between the people who run everything, right? The people who run things, who talk about how to build an empire, how to use your mind to change the world, which have been, you know, because of geographic, you know, coincidences a long time ago, ended up with a certain kind of people. I think it's, you know, I'm really interested in bringing this kind of information to the oppressed.
I hear you. So what I'm getting the call to cut it out now, but what I want to say is, I understand the desire to share knowledge, but what I'm saying is step back and ask and see if people are asking for it, if people are giving consent for it, and if people, your friends, your so-called friends, are actually inviting you to do that. If they're not giving you consent, then there isn't a consensual space there for you to be offering that information. Okay, thank you
so much.
Thanks,
Dominic.
Awesome, thanks for having me.
So before we get too far along, just going to take a break, instead of a song, I actually had pulled up an excerpt from the poet Claudia Rankine, award-winning poet Claudia Rankine, for this book, Citizen, that's coming up.
But before we do that, I just wanted to invite any other people that wanted to call, because part of this show was to dissenter whiteness and to maybe even dissenter cis maleness. So it would be lovely if anyone else wanted to call as well and to offer a different perspective. Thank you.
And that number is 503-231-8187. So this is just a little bit from the book that really was just known for really poetically describing microaggressions.
You're in the dark, in the car, watching the black tarred street being swallowed by speed. He tells you his dean is making him hire a person of color when there are so many great writers out there. You think maybe this is an experiment and you are being tested or retroactively insulted, or you have done something that communicates this is an okay conversation to be having. Why do you feel comfortable saying this to me? You wish the light would turn red or a police siren would go off so you could slam on the brakes, slam into the car ahead of you, fly forward so quickly, both your faces would suddenly be exposed to the wind. As usual, you drive straight through the moment with the expected backing off of what was previously said. It is not only that confrontation is headache-producing, it is also that you have a destination that doesn't include acting like this moment isn't inhabitable, hasn't happened before, and that before isn't part of the now, as the night darkens and the time shortens between where we are and where we are going. I live in Claremont, California, and there's a...
Hi, you're listening to Bread and Roses, where we're taking calls about microaggressions. I'm Pamela Santos. Our guest is Anna Vo.
Hello.
And you were listening to Claudia Rankine. I wanted to give more space for our callers, so I did have to cut that excerpt short. And we have Ellie on the line. Ellie?
Yep.
Hi.
Hi.
What did you want to talk to us about?
So, first off, thank you, both of you, for doing this. I feel like it's a really good way, you know, to give a space for voices, especially for people who kind of go and, like, who experience these things every day, but it's, like, I don't really have a, you know, like, people to talk to, I guess. I do, but it's, like, it's never given space to where, like, other people can hear it, you know, that these things happen. So thank you all for that.
Yeah, of course.
Thank you.
Man, I'm like sitting in a parking lot and I was listening to this and I was screaming.
Yeah.
When, you know, this book in the 30s, that's supposed to be what is supposed to help me be successful. Like,
yeah.
How?
So, I actually call that colonizing behavior when people assume that one method that may have worked for one person 100 years ago would also work again and again and again for totally different people in different contexts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So but it's also like how, you know, like how our knowledge systems, you know, for people of color, like that have been passed down, you know, like, from your ancestors, like who gets to validate whether that knowledge is, you know, like is important or not? I feel like,
totally.
You know, especially in college and in like university, I'm like, learning all these things that are from white men.
And luckily, and like, I'm sorry, keep going.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
I was going to say, luckily, we have a lot of embodied knowledge from families or from how we grew up, and that's a lot of that knowledge is through storytelling and through, you know, how we deal with ailments, like, you know, herbal things and things, how we respond to not feeling well, our bodies, and food, through food. So the nourishment in those ways and bodily ways, I feel like that a lot of that is very ancestral. Did you have, you sound like you had a heavy heart.
I definitely do have a heavy heart. I just, you know, it's, I think, you know, I wanted to, when I listened to the caller, I guess I was kind of sad, because it's like, I don't know whether, did he experience microaggressions? Like, I felt like I wanted to hear stories or to kind of feel validated or something, but it kind of just made me more anxious and like,
yeah,
so I'm kind of just sitting with all these feelings right now. I'm sorry. Like,
yeah, no, I'm sorry.
I can't wait after.
Thank you for voicing that. Thank you.
Often
so I have those conversations quite a lot. I run trainings through Oregon with folks from different organizations, and having those conversations about either reverse racism or reverse sexism, so to speak, and kind of understanding where the initial offense is coming from, like understanding that people feel, basically, it's, you know, usually it's white fragility, and that's like a challenge to their authority, or a challenge to white solidarity, or a challenge to some kind of white structure that people have in their minds. Understanding one, the emotional response, and then the systemic reason for having that response. We didn't quite get there because we only had, you know, 15 minutes, but I'm hoping that person is going to think and reflect a little bit more on what was said, even if he kind of bulldozed through that in the call. I feel like if he's still listening now, that he's probably going to have a little reflection on that. So I have still faith in people's ability to reflect on themselves and critically analyze their own intentions and the kind of space that they take up in the world. But that's him. But with you, you said that sometimes it's hard for you to have space to kind of even process these things. How do you find community or reach out be able to talk about these things in your daily life?
I definitely use like my sister, like my like friends, you know, like POC, you know, and I'll talk to them, but it's also I find myself like I'll hold back because it's like I understand that they go through these things too, so it's like I feel like it's emotional labor, you know.
Is there ever a space where you get to a point of laughter, being able to laugh about it when things are so ridiculous?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, there's definitely places where it's like it's kind of a release, you know, and it's kind of like a way to process is by like laughing about it. But you know, sometimes it's just like. I know I'm laughing about this and we're laughing about this, but it's like, it's also like really serious, I feel. Not really serious, but it's like, it's like it contributes to kind of takes away from my well-being, you know? Like,
sure.
It's harmful to my health, I feel like.
Yeah, I'm sure. But and I think
microaggressions. Yeah.
Sure. And I think part of that is where you turn your focus and what you center. So if you, for example, if you're centering white dominance, or if you're centering white supremacy, or focusing on negative interactions, then your energy gets taken up by that. And I think the ultimate ideal space would be not to give time and energy and our mental space to our oppressors or to oppressive situations, and to be able to build independent of those spaces. You know what I mean? And you, it sounds like you have really
definitely.
Good. Yeah, you have great allies. You've got sounds like you have family, which is great, who have more than just your shared heritage, but like shared experiences and understand you. So kind of understanding the things that nourish you and heal you, and remembering that, okay, I can laugh with those folks, and that makes me feel good. And spending time on those relationships is more important and more nourishing than spending time focusing on some crappy interaction. I think I'm getting the wrap-up call, Ellie. I'm so sorry,
okay.
But thank you so much.
No, thank you so much.
No, thank you for calling.
Thank you for listening. And I wanted to, first of all, I just want to thank Ellie one more time. I'm really glad that we got to take as much time as we needed to hear Ellie. And especially how you noticed that Ellie sounded like they had a heavy heart.
Yeah.
So thanks for taking that time. If we could just talk a little bit more before our next caller about just other ways that microaggressions look or sound like.
They, you know, they can be conversationally, or they can be in a service situation when you might go to a store and someone else might get served first. Or this happens to me a lot when people kind of walk in front of you because you're, it's like you're not there at all because you're not a valued, you know, you're not seemingly as valuable as they are, or the importance that they've put on themselves. But what I, you know, that's called is invisibilization. Different ways. When someone minimizes your experience or your perspective, we kind of heard a little bit about that earlier in this show. So basically questioning someone's experience or someone's emotional reaction, and instead of validating it and hearing it, but kind of silencing them. When people are tokenized for what they represent rather than who they are as humans, as full, complete humans. Colonizing behavior, we talked about that already, when, you know, organizers or political organizations or whatever kind of repeat one model, not thinking to kind of talk to the community of color that they're working with and being like, does this even work for you? Do you want this? You know, we're going to assume that this is going to work in a different continent or in a different city. Fetishizing culture. So that happens a lot with, you know, fashion, food, and appropriation, and corporate. I have a blank. But when... anyway, so...
I mean, media, definitely, and in art, in ways that we're expressing culture.
No, absolutely. But what I think I specifically was talking about is when people may or may not feel cooler, like more of a cool factor, because they have a closer proximity to a marginalized identity. So using a marginalized identity as a prop for their own social capital. And then kind of... More broadly, maybe in a Portland context, when, you know, white feminism or white queer feminism or like media kind of skips over people of color and skips over the perspectives of people of color and centers whiteness. And even though it's like, oh, we're talking about marginalized identities, we're talking about but they're actually whitewashing it completely and not understanding or honoring that there are folks with very, very unique and different experiences that are not from a white culture. So it's not centering people of color in those regards. Does that make sense?
Oh, that totally makes sense. And it sounds like, and I'm going to pick, you know, a couple, because you definitely went over a lot. I'm going to pick the ones that may not sound negative, because, you know, not getting served first and not, you know, like being seen when, let's say, you're going on the bus or something, or that's a negative. Like, you can sort of feel and see that that's a negative. But I wanted to ask you about when people think they're giving you compliments.
All right, and that's more in the fetishization
yes.
or in the in the co-optation. That's what the word I was trying to think of, or appropriation, when people kind of celebrate, you know, they tokenize one aspect or element of somebody's identity, but not them as an individual, and they're like, well, we're celebrating you, but they're actually ignoring that person's actual history and actual experience and actual perspective. So it's very insulting, because you're minimizing somebody to a two-dimensional caricature at times. Yeah.
Do you have any kind of examples from, you know, like when you've brought that up in trainings, how that can look sometimes kind of in the everyday, how it sounds?
I mean, I hear about it when people talk about hair, or when people talk about facial structure, and when people think that they're complimenting somebody on their
hair is so political.
Right. On their point of difference. So basically, like, oh my gosh, your point of difference is really interesting. But what they're doing is othering that person, they're marginalizing that person, then they're pointing out that you don't fit in, you know, you don't fit in with what I perceive to be the norm, and I need to talk about it, and I need to point it out to the whole room. So it's just another form of alienation, and people don't always see that. So it kind of just depends on how it's said, and what kind of space it's in, and what kind of trusted relationship or not trusted relationship it's happening.
I feel like I've heard it or observed it when people say, you have good hair for a blank, like, person, or...
So ascribing a level of quality or a level and the other thing is ascribing intelligence. People will ascribe different levels of intelligence to different groups of folks. And I won't disclose too much because I also work in the social work field, and it's called deficit thinking in an educational field, when people assume that well, these kids just aren't going to do as well as other kids, you know, and so it's kind of people understand that it's not a great approach, and that they need to sort it out and not have those stereotypes and those prejudices about those folks. But
we're going to go to our next caller.
Fantastic.
And so, Cheryl, hey.
Is Cheryl still there?
We're hearing a little bit, but not on the other part of it. We'll try it again. Cheryl?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello, Cheryl.
Hello. First of all, Pamela, Anna, thank you so much for the show. Your grace and gracefulness and graciousness, it's just, it's such a beautiful example. It's one thing to talk about microaggressions, but then I'm standing here listening to them being inflicted on you, and you're responding with total grace. So I want to thank you for... because I need more models of, like, how do you deal with that in the moment? So
sure.
That's my first thank you. I do also want to say that I am a white cisgender woman, and so...
Thanks for saying that.
I'm aware of space, and let me know if you feel that I'm taking up more space than you want me to have at any point. So
okay.
I wanted to ask for your advice on kind of a... You gave so many examples of different types of microaggressions. It was really helpful. And there's this other type that I cannot sort through, and I would love your help.
Mm-hmm.
And that, it specifically does, the biggest example comes up with 45. And so I'm part of disability community, and I have a lot of pride about that. And most of my friends are disabled people. And what I'm finding is that when people want to attack 45, and I'm talking even liberal people, left-wingers, anybody, they will ascribe disabilities to him that he doesn't actually have, and people don't seem to see how that hurts my community. So,
also, like mental illness, you mean too?
I understand what you're saying, yeah.
Mental illness is one of them, but that one's tougher because I do see all these licensed mental health workers saying, no, we actually think he's got one. So I the ones that gets me is mean tangerine, Cheeto face, tiny hands, all of these things that instead of calling him a white supremacist and a misogynist and, and naming what he is doing and saying, we try to take him down by saying, your skin is so disgusting and not fully human. And that's
got you. Okay.
That's got racial overtones completely, but it also, at the same time, has disability overtones.
Yeah.
And are we saying it's okay, or undertones, whatever it is. Is it okay, then, to make fun of somebody who's got a skin or a facial difference because of disability? I cannot figure out how to deal with this one.
Okay. So I think that we're talking about a couple of things. One of them is stigma that already exists around disabilities and mental health issues. So, you know, such a giant societal stigma attached to neurodivergent folks and communities, and then adding to that stigma by utilizing them as negative names. So using them as insults and absorbing them into insults just kind of does a disservice to those communities. So I think, I mean, I feel like what you're saying is wrapped up in this kind of conversation about how people use language and how people are pretty irresponsible with, and it, you know, it comes with the word lame, it comes with other words that have to do with sexuality that people use to imply that someone is terrible. But I think that's kind of also what you're talking about, how folks are coming from a space where they are using language irresponsibly and not really understanding the negative effects and how those things perpetuate awful stereotypes and are really damaging a lot of communities and a lot of work that people have done in order to destigmatize a lot of that stuff.
Yeah. And the left-wing people still keep turning on us by saying, well, I didn't mean it that way. I'm not making fun of actual people with ichthyosis or what. I'm just making fun of him. And that fragility and defensiveness and trying to get them to understand you are attacking people either with a disability or, as you know, people of color and poor people have been also ascribed disabilities they don't have.
Right.
And so you're smashing all those together. I don't know. Do you have a good, pithy comeback?
I mean, I try to be very clear, and I've actually used in the part in the very dark, deep. Sorry, I was going to say dark past, but I meant to say far back in my past. I've used when people have used the word gay, or when you've used other words to kind of insult something, and I've basically picked something that they identify with, because most people's identities in some way or another have probably in society have been used as an insult, unfortunately, because greater society does victimize different groups of people in generational gaps. So in this particular moment, I said a word that I was like, well, what if someone called you this, which is the religion that he is. And I was like, but it's also a word that people use to describe other people negatively. And I was like, so, and he's like, that's totally different. That's really offensive. And I was like, that's actually the same, because what you're doing is you're using a word that describes a lot of people as a negative insult. And you're doing it without thinking about it because it doesn't affect you. But now that I've said something that affects you, you think that that's terrible. So using people's personal experiences, I usually bring that in, and that's the only way that people can kind of inhabit a lot of those feelings or build empathy. Being really clear and saying you're pathologizing, you're saying that this pathology is a bad thing when it's just a diagnosis, or it's just you know, a thing that exists, and you're making it harder for folks to step out of stigma the more you continue to use that as an insult.
Yeah. Oh, what an amazing strategy. Thank you. I hope I remember it.
No worries.
Well, good thing we archive this episode so we can come back to this. Thanks for calling, Cheryl.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank Bye-bye. You. Bye.
And just in case people were forgetting that number, it's 503-231-8187. We're going to take one more break for another poet by the name of Maya Wegeriff. The poem is Sometimes It Pours, and please, I definitely welcome everyone. You can find that online. The music video really adds another layer to it. So this is Sometimes It Pours.
When in a college in Massachusetts, a white boy takes a laptop out of a room, he is leaving. But when you take your laptop out of the room, you are stealing. The dean on duty is called, and the white policeman's spittle lands on your face as he tells you to calm down. Everybody wants you to calm down, but no one wants to acknowledge what's happening, and you are arrested for disturbing the peace. The judge laughs when you tell him it was racist. And when the froth from the side of his mouth lands at your feet, you will know what Claudia Rankine means when she says that as light as the rain seems, it still rains down on you. When in a bar in Manhattan, you drop your earphones, they are no longer yours. You must hand them to the bartender to keep for whoever has lost them. You explain that they came out of your bag. When he asks if you're sure, you know that as light as the rain seems, it still rains down. After years in the US and Tanzania, the UK and Jamaica and Kenya, you are back in the former white town of Lutrichat, nicknamed Makado to amuse us. When a fat white boy with pimples who has never left the South Pinsburg area in all of his life looks at you with disgust as you walk past the tacky restaurant he's sitting in, it's as light as rain gets, but it still rains down on you. And it drizzles for days in New York and Massachusetts and Lutrichat until you come home drenched. You didn't know that tiny specks of almost invisible rain could make you so wet. Yes, most often the rain is so light they won't believe you when you tell them it's raining. They will tell you you imagined the rain, that your skin is too sensitive to water. But sometimes it pours. Not at the bar, or in the streets, or the courtroom. It pours at your house so hard that your roof leaks and your pillow is drenched at 3 a.m. in the morning and it's flooding in like, why didn't I say yes, Your Honor? It was racist and I'm going to tell you why. And it's pouring so hard now with thundering rage like, why did I give him my earphones? And it's pouring so hard now, it's whipping my face. Like, why do I care that an Afrikaner farm boy sees my humanity? And it pours and it pours until the cows have run out of rain. But why does it only pour after you leave the mall? And the judge gets off and the bartender goes home and you're left with the late night work of mopping the floors. It rains so hard when you're alone, fighting desperately to feel at home in yourself, even though your roof leaks, to love yourself, even though sometimes you don't speak.
Fine. Hi, this is Bread and Roses. I'm Pamela Santos, and I'm still here with Anna Vo.
Hello.
And because we really don't have that much time, but still another caller on the line, I wanted to ask you where we left off before. Sometimes there might be times that you cannot disrupt, but when you can, how do you?
Okay, so one, it's completely your decision or not whether you want to take on the emotional labor of disrupting something. It is a lot of effort, as you can see and hear, and it's a gift that you're giving to folks of education and of your time. So if you want to give that gift, if it's someone that you want, that you care about and that you are trying to keep in your life and you want that to repair, then go for it. But if it's not, if it's someone that doesn't deserve that gift, then you don't need to give it to them. My approach is always like, if someone's a bigot or if someone is ignorant, that's their problem, not my problem. And so if people are acting like that to me, I usually laugh at it because it's really not my problem. It's their problem because they have to live with being that person until someone gives them the time to be better, or gives them the chance to be a better person. So remembering that, and then also being able to build community and talk about it or laugh about it or peer share and get ideas on how to disrupt those things in the future or how to respond to those things in the future. But I did want to talk quickly about a couple of things that I'm doing in the future. So I do trainings for folks around inclusion and other things, transformative justice, trauma-informed care around Oregon. And specifically, I also do POC-only trainings and POC-only spaces, empowerment groups and support groups. So I'm doing one specifically for people of color who work directly with survivors of sexual assault or domestic violence. And that will cover self-reflection, unpacking triggers, support advocacy, shifting community paradigms, sharing resources and mini trainings. And then on Sunday, I'm actually doing one for KBOO.
Yay!
And that's for POC only as well, who volunteer for KBOO. And we're going to be unpacking those things as well and giving each other a space to be able to discuss stuff that affects us in not only in this building, but also in this city.
And thank you for that, because it's very important when you're having safe space. And as you talked about earlier, about decentering white supremacy and whiteness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I would encourage folks to, if they feel like they're around toxic people or around toxic situations, then minimize if you can. If you have the privilege of choosing that, minimize your interaction with those toxic people. And our last thing I wanted to say was happy Pride.
Yes.
Okay, I'm really excited to talk to our last caller.
Yeah, and Jennifer, hi.
Hi. Oh my gosh, this is sort of a big topic. I guess mm-hmm. it's about like macroaggression versus microaggression.
Great.
I'm a Latina. I'm 41, and I work in the tech community, and I go to these tech meetups. I do that. I mean, I don't know, to get ahead, to learn more about tech. I suppose those are my reasons for like voluntarily going to these tech meetups. but I went to this one. I went to this one where it was all weekend long. You get together with a group of people and like try to come up with tech ideas. Mm. And it was it's very organized. It's not casual. It's pretty structured. You have to buy a ticket and, you know, it's like it's completely organized.
Mm.
And anyways, this meetup was so destructive. I mean, I'm just feeling horrible. And that wasn't the point of... Mm. I mean, that's not why I go. I go for, I suppose, empowerment or sort of social climbing, I guess you could call it, or social networking.
Well, networking, let's call it that.
it's not, because, what happened was the complete opposite. Mm. Like, the people that I worked with in my group, like, they worked in construction, because they're working on, like, a tech project. And, this one guy said that like people, he managed a construction company, and like Latinos got hurt more often because they didn't train them. And
oh my goodness.
And so they knew that the Latinos would get hurt, and it was like intentional. And he actually injured me. He injured my hand during the meetup, and that like,
oh my
intentionally.
Goodness.
Yeah. And then the other men that were in the group, they knew that like construction people get hurt all the time, and it sounded like the managers just didn't care and the companies just didn't care whether they were Latino or white, but I'm sure they care less about the Latinos. That was awkward. That just, and then of course my hand, he, one of the people in the group injured my hand intentionally, and
yeah.
Supposedly he was a manager and he was like trying to make sure people were all right, but I mean, he was very tense around me. I mean, they didn't want me to do anything. They kind of minimized like my abilities, and just, they ignored me. They didn't listen to any of my suggestions.
I'm so sorry.
It was really clear that they were trying to exclude me just from everything. It was like I was just, was in a room with them, but it was like I wasn't there. It was like I was invisible.
I'm so sorry.
Jennifer, we're going to have to finish up in a minute, but I'm really glad that you called and that we were able to get you on the show and get you on the air.
And I was just going to say, if you can start your own group, is that something that you can do?
Well, yeah, I've been considering starting a few different groups. I've just been really busy right now. But this particular event is sort of like an event to attract a lot of people like from around the area. Like the, supposedly the brightest people. I mean, it's really heavily publicized and... And I just had a terrible experience. It was just so depressing.
I'm so sorry.
Just, I mean, it's beyond just me, but it's like, this is the community. These are the leaders. These are like the brightest minds in this area, and this is what they do.
Yeah, I'm so sorry that happened to you.
And, thank you for calling, Jennifer. This is actually all the time that we have for this show with Brian Roses. I am really extremely honored that I had Anna Vo in the space tonight. And this is a song. I wanted to let you introduce.
Oh, yeah. I also run a record label, a black metal and doom record label, noise record label called An Out Recordings. And this is a 12-inch record that we released a while ago by Ragana. Thank you.
We're on every Friday, 6 to 7. And you can let us know what you think about the show. Comments on KBOO.fm, on our show page, Bread and Roses, on our Facebook page, and we're on Twitter, Bread Roses Radio. Thank you so much to all of our callers and everyone listening tonight.
Yeah, and thank you so much. And Jennifer, feel free to email me if you want to. We can continue the conversation another time.
Anna Vo is very Googleable. So thank you, and have a great night, everyone.
Happy Pride.